Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program of science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and yes, the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With me this morning, Ellen Datlow. You don't know who Ellen Datlow is. Shame on you. Just stay tuned and find out.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. The Visit is the newest film by M. Night Shyamalan, and it come back here, you cowards! I swear, the past decade has not been easy for those of us who believe that Shyamalan is a seriously good filmmaker. And granted, Shyamalan hasn't helped his case much, both with the films he's been making and with his public image, which, even when his projects have tanked, could be politely called self-aggrandizing. Let me tell you about Frank Capra. No, not enough time, but generally speaking, I tend to let that kind of stuff slide. You have to separate the art from the artist, after all. Let me tell you about John Lennon. No, sorry, not even that. Actually, though, even at his lowest ebb, Shyamalan's skills as a storyteller and filmmaker were still in evidence. Yes, even in The Last Airbender. Yes, even in After Earth. Go sue me. So, after 10 years, I keep pulling for Shyamalan because I keep hoping that eventually the M. Night Shyamalan of The Sixth Sense and controversially Unbreakable and even more controversially Signs, you can sue me on that one too, that guy would show up again. Now, here comes The Visit, and welcome back, M. Night Shyamalan. It's not a great film, but given that this is a co-production with Blumhouse and follows that production company's standard found footage mockumentary horror template, which otherwise bores me to tears now, this is a very good movie. In The Visit, the character running the camera supposedly recording everything is Becca, a teenager played by Olivia DeJonge. Her father has recently abandoned her and her younger brother Tyler, played by Ed Oxenbold, and so her mother sends both kids off to spend a week with their maternal grandparents, who were estranged from their daughter some 15 years ago and who only now are trying to reconnect to their grandkids, if not their own child. Not surprisingly, Becca's video footage gradually reveals that Nana and Pop-Pop might have a few screws loose. The grandfather gets easily confused about where he is and what he's supposed to be doing, while the grandmother has a clothing-optional approach to wandering around the house at night, among other dismaying tics. Quite encouragingly, Shyamalan doesn't leave it at that and manages to add some consequence to the usual Blumhouse shenanigans. Shyamalan, as is typical for him, wrote the script as well as directing, and his skills at giving his characters an emotional investment beyond just reacting to the creepy stuff at hand are evident. Amidst all of this, the kids are working out their abandonment, and, more affectingly, They're concerned for what that abandonment is doing to their mother, which makes this the rare Blumhouse film where you're not just waiting for the next spectral figure to lean in from the side of the frame, and that's a welcome upgrade. And yes, there still is Shyamalan indulging Shyamalan for Shyamalan's sake. In this case, Becca is not just shooting a documentary, but fancies herself an auteur, dropping terminology that no 15-year-old should know outside of one who spent her whole life barricaded in a basement with only a stack of cahiers du cinéma for entertainment. Meanwhile, she's able to light and line up her shots in a way that resembles, oh, I don't know, a seasoned director working with a skilled union crew who's pretending that this is all found footage, maybe? Something like that. To Shyamalan's credit, he also appears to be taking the wind out of all the increasingly well-worn Blumhouse cliches, including one precious moment when young Tyler imitates the old, creepy thing skittering abruptly across the frame trope. By the way, the film is frequently quite funny, and it's about time, and yeah, that's another welcome thing that I think Shyamalan brings to the game. The Visit isn't quite a radical reinvention of the found footage form. For that, check out the moody and beautiful The Midnight Swim. But Shyamalan manages to inject some needed energy and emotional resonance into the proceedings, demonstrating that the faith his fans, myself included, have in him is not misplaced. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at my Mighty Movie Podcast website. So check out what you missed by going to mightymoviepodcast.com.
Now, you see, if you wanted really good radio, you should have been listening to the conversation Ellen Datlow and I were just having off the air about, about movies and what's streaming where. I haven't found your mic yet. Say that again. No.
Can you hear me?
Nope. Let's try this.
Hello?
Ah! Okay. Now you're on.
Other movies we were talking about.
Yes, other movies, starting with the fact that the only M. Night Shyamalan film that I have ever liked was The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, and I like bits of the other ones, of some of the ones I've seen.
Oh, I like bits of all of them, even his worst, because I agree with Dan that he's a great talent.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no desire to see the new one just because I've been burned so many times. Mm-hmm. And there's so much stuff that's coming to TV and cable over the next month alone.
Well, I'm waiting for all these things that I've missed on TV that I watch, seasonally.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm waiting for the last season of Mad Men, Penny Dreadful, Hannibal. I forget what else I'm waiting for.
There's another good horror series, which I haven't.
I haven't seen American Horror Story at all. I'm going to probably see that start watching that eventually.
Yeah.
I'm getting the second season of The Bridge, which is a Scandinavian show, cop show.
Subtitled, I trust.
I guess so. I don't notice anymore, but yes, it must be. It is definitely subtitled.
Otherwise, you're going to have serious problems with it.
Yeah, but I just noticed that that's up, yeah. I would like to see the second season of The Fall, which isn't out yet. The one with Gillian Anderson.
Right.
I saw the first season, and there's supposed to be a second season. And there was something else that
I know how to get that, but...
Oh? Can you get it for me before it?
Let's talk off the air about that, shall we?
Okay. Yeah. And there's another one that I just wrote down that I forgot that I'm waiting for, and I don't even remember what it was.
Yeah.
That I don't know if it's. Oh, has the second season of Fargo come out? Was that done?
No, that had no that. Did that's ever, was that's in about 3 weeks.
Oh, all right. Well,
that
then
starts
I'm
in about.
Then I have to wait. I don't do streaming. I only do DVDs. So I have to wait a year for that one something. But that's okay. I'll catch up.
I thought the first season of Fargo was excellent.
Yeah, I have almost 300 things in my Netflix queue.
Yeah.
Including the
Is
whole...
Is that all? I have way more.
I have the whole thing of X-Files. I never saw the X-Files. I mean, I saw one or two episodes, I think, and I have the whole thing. I haven't looked at it yet. But
I never
saw the X-Files. I've never seen Moonlighting, I want to see, because it sounds like fun.
It was.
I never saw that.
You've got to let me know what you think of it now. Because
I may not get to it for another 10 years, but when I get to it, I'll let you know.
Yeah, no, fine. But I think that it is so much of its era.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so much.
Well,
of its
I want to
time.
See Bruce Willis and what's her name,
Sybil Shepherd. They were good.
Yeah, it sounds
remember,
like
Bruce Willis can still be.
Yeah,
very
he still
good.
Can. Yeah, but yeah. I never saw that, and I heard about.
I liked it. I really liked it. I mean, there was a point at which it got so dreary and dull in later seasons, and at the point when it was canceled, all of a sudden the people who created it paid attention to it again, and it was like the last six episodes were some of the best television because they'd been canceled it and they paid attention and sort of what like happened with Felicity.
I never saw that. I haven't watched TV for years.
Felicity was J.J. Abrams' first show before anybody knew who J.J. Abrams was. And it was a CW teen girls show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was doing well for a while. I think it went three seasons. And at some point, it got canceled. And J.J. Abrams thought, well, you know, few people know this about me, but I'm actually into science fiction and fantasy and weird stuff. He'd never done any before that. And so what he did, and he had no budget when they canceled it. So what he did was he took the first few episodes of the show and then put her into those episodes again as a ghostly figure trying to intervene.
Oh, weird.
In
okay.
What, in, okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And all of a sudden this, like, why would you watch this show becomes one of the most interesting things on TV.
Yeah. Well, I've just watched the first season of The Nick, and I'm still not sure how I feel about it with Clive Owen.
Oh, yes.
And I really, it's so depressing. I mean, I watched the first two episodes, one disc, I think, and I said, I don't know if I want to continue. I really don't know if I want to continue.
Yeah, I
and then I watched the next two, and it kind of, they usually do suck me in, and it was interesting, but I find it so depressing. I mean, I finished the season out. I don't know when, I guess they're having another season, and I don't know if I want to, I don't know if I want to watch it. It's just so depressing.
I think most stuff today, most media today, and a lot of fiction is just depressing because I think that's what present company excluded editors think people want.
Well, I love most of what I've been, I mean, I love Hannibal. I mean, I love a lot of stuff that's not exactly happy-go-lucky.
Yeah.
But this just is.
Well, Hannibal.
Hannibal's horror. So I mean, that's
yeah.
I mean, the Nick is.
And it's Brian Fuller.
Yeah.
It's
I
got
mean,
a really
yeah.
good.
I mean, the
really
Nick is just,
producer.
Is like realistic. Probably more so, you know, it's not fantastical anyway. There's no supernatural element. And it's just, boy, I wouldn't want to live then.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, you know. On the other hand, Deadwood was brilliant. You know, I mean, that was
I
not.
Like Deadwood.
You know, there's something about, there's a difference between depressing and there's something energetic about, there was energy, there was a. There's a difference, and I don't know.
There was some humor in Deadwood.
And yes, there was, and there was over the topness. I mean, a lot of some of it was very over the top.
I had the feeling when watching Deadwood that the people were having fun.
Yeah, I mean, to me, so far the Nick, no one seems to be having much fun. You know, and everything, and you know, I actually. So I don't know. I'll see. I mean, it's not going to be out for a long time, so I can decide, do I want to continue?
Yeah, the problem is, and, you know, thanks largely to you, and I guess also to an extent to John Joseph Adams, I have decided I don't dislike horror, which I used to say all the time. Mm. I just dislike certain elements that are within it, which are horror for... Gratuitous horror.
You mean gratuitous violence, not horror.
Usually gratuitous violence. There's a new TV series coming, something barbarian.
Oh.
The Bastard Executioner.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's interesting. Some
that's
people
going
are
to
just
make
saying,
Game of Thrones.
That's
look
what I've heard.
Tame.
Someone actually gave it a good review. I mean, I don't know. I have no interest. I won't watch it. I haven't watched Game of Thrones yet. Eventually, I might. That's on my in my.
I follow. I'm a big George R.R. Martin fan. Mm-hmm. I watched Game of Thrones through about episode 6 mm-hmm. of the first season. Mm-hmm. And in that episode, as somebody gets a sword in the neck, mm-hmm. the camera...
No spoilers, please.
Yeah, no. Okay. Someone, I'm okay. not saying whom. It wasn't George. Thank God. I like George a lot. A character in a battle mm-hmm. gets a sword in the neck. This mm-hmm. is nothing for that show. But what the camera had to do is it had to go and show us the arterial spouting. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, is not entertainment. That's not why I'm, mm-hmm. you know, the whole...
Well, if you have too much of that, it becomes deadening and it doesn't shock anymore. It just is, you know...
It becomes, yeah.
Well, that's what's the problem to me with a lot of horror movies. I mean, what happened to horror is... What happened to the perception of people... People's perception of horror, unfortunately, is... influenced by what the movies have become, a lot of them.
Let's put it in two
stuff.
Words, and unfortunately he just died, Wes Craven.
I don't blame him. I mean, there are many...
No, he's
I
not
mean,
the
I,
only.
And I didn't watch much of his movies, many yeah. of his movies. I'm talking about much more than that. I mean, the Saw movies, the ones that are just...
Yes.
The torture porn.
Yes.
I mean, that's unfortunately what people think horror is, so when you say you edit horror, they think, oh...
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And that's not... That's a very, very tiny bit, and it's the worst... written bit usually, and
but
it's,
then you
and it's
see,
a kind that's oh, just not very good.
But then you see a horror movie like The Babadook.
Yeah.
And you say, you know what, there's
you
some really good horror out there that doesn't have to use those tropes.
Right, but it's still hard for horror purveyors to persuade the mass audience that there is horror
took,
that doesn't have to like be bleeding all over the place. To
it took me a long
out.
Time. The main reason I finally saw it was because I'm a big Essie Davis fan.
Mm-hmm. I don't know her. That was the mother? I mean, I don't...
Yes.
What was she in?
That's the mother. She's in an Australian, what would you call it, murder cozy series mm-hmm. called Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries
okay.
that one can catch on mm-hmm. various streaming, and mm-hmm. you can get it on DVD. That basically she solves murder. She's a 1920s flapper mm-hmm. in Australia. And it's a fun sitcom-y, but not. It's a fun mm-hmm. murder mystery thing, very mm-hmm. feminist, very clever in its way from a totally different culture. And mm-hmm. she's just a brilliant actress. Mm-hmm. She also did a non-musical Sweeney Todd mm-hmm. in England with Ray Winstone
wow.
as Sweeney.
Wow. I love Ray Winstone. He's fabulous.
He was a great Sweeney.
Yeah,
you know, there's no Sondheim in it, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but they do the String of Pearls story, which is the original Sweeney Todd Penny Dreadful, I guess. Mm-hmm. Pence Dreadful? Whatever is the original story of mm-hmm. public domain. And she was a great Mrs. Lovett.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she's the star of The Babadook.
Right,
she's the
right.
mother.
Yeah.
And she's yeah. now going to be, it was announced like yesterday in Game of Thrones, and somebody mm-hmm. posted on my Facebook page, oh, I guess you're going to have to watch GOT now, Jim. And it's like, no, I will never be watching that series. Mm-hmm. Never. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, I cheer George. Mm-hmm. I am so glad that he can build a new swimming pool. Mm-hmm. I am so glad that he can go out and denounce puppies. Mm-hmm. And
throw a party in a mansion for all his friends.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I have friends who live near him in mm-hmm. New Mexico, and he's a wonderful neighbor. And yeah. he's a great
guy.
I mean,
he brought me out to the Jean Cocteau Theater to do a thing about the doll collection, to bring it back to my books.
Oh, okay, and, yes. You know, well, back to your books. We haven't started
on
your books.
He bought the Jean Cocteau Theater, which is this classic theater in Santa Fe. And he shows most of the time, five or six days a week, they show movies. And then 1 or 2 days a week, they have events. And he brought me out there to do an event for my anthology that came out from Tor a few months ago, The Doll Collection. We had a creepy doll contest.
That is The Doll Collection, yes. From Tor Books, edited by Ellen Datlow, yes. Datlow. Sorry, yes. You were saying.
And available all over the place. In, oh, yeah. E-book, too, and I can't remember if it's an audio book yet, but it will be. But anyway, George and I had to judge a creepy doll contest. And I mean, he set it up.
I'm glad I didn't take that sip of iced coffee as I was about to.
Yeah, and so we were up front, and it was an auditorium, and these people brought in, they were brought in by, and some of the people were there, some people had sent their dolls in, and we had to judge them. Which
are there photos of this, or must be?
Check on, yeah, probably if you Google it, you'll probably find some photos. George had posted some photos on his blog. And I actually was lucky enough to a few of the dolls I really loved. I said, gee, can I buy these? How would I get by these? But I had to pick one, of course, that was small enough. I mean, some of them were huge. And
right.
And so there was one that I really liked. And I said, oh, can you find out how much this would cost? I'd like to buy. And the person wasn't there, but they found out. And I should get the person's name, but she gave it to me. I mean, she let them get, and so they mailed it to me, so I have it in my apartment now, one of the creepy dolls. It was not a winner. I think it might have gotten a place, I can't remember, but it was one of our favorites. But yeah. I don't think it won. I don't think it won. But there was I think a 12-year-old girl or something created one, and it was pretty damn good.
I am not surprised at that.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So anyway, so yes. So George is very generous. He's very loyal.
And I wish
he's
him
the same,
all the
he's
luck
the same
in the
as
world.
He always was. I mean, he hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Which is really unusual.
Except in one way.
He's rich, rich, rich.
Exactly.
I mean, he was rich. Now he's rich, rich, rich.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done well, from working on TV.
When he lived in Hoboken, which is when
I didn't
knew
know
him
then.
I did. Yeah. I did. Mm-hmm. He wasn't rich, rich, rich
then.
Oh,
no, no. He, no, but he
was
did well.
He was the nicest guy.
Yeah. I mean, he did well. He worked in Hollywood for a long time. I mean, with...
overnight sensation of 35 years.
Beauty and the Beast. Yeah.
Before that, the second version of The Twilight Zone.
Was that before Beauty and the Beast?
I'm not sure.
I think it might have been.
Yeah. Harlan sort of launched it, but George did a lot of the work. Mm-hmm. Then Harlan Ellison stepped out.
Of The Twilight Zone, you mean?
Of The Twilight mm-hmm. Zone, and George did seasons 2 and 3.
Oh, did he? Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a lot of the scripts, including mm-hmm. The Last Defender of Camelot by Roger Zelazny.
Oh, okay.
He did a lot of Zelazny in there. Mm-hmm. And they were doing, what Serling had done was mm-hmm. good. And he was getting, Richard Matheson and Robert Block and
right.
good people to do stuff. But George was doing adaptations of Tiptree and mm-hmm. Le Guin mm-hmm. and the modern...
See, I didn't see any of those. I didn't...
They're very good.
Are they on Netflix?
They are.
Maybe I'll...
Now, there's a third series of The Twilight Zone.
Uh-huh. Were those half-hour shows or were they hour shows?
They were hour-long shows.
George's?
George's. Mm-hmm. They were hour-long shows that very often had half-hour segments. So there mm-hmm. might be, and occasionally 20-minute segments. Mm-hmm. Or there would be two 25-minute segments and a 10-minute short.
Mm-hmm.
So it's whatever fit into, an hour is 42 minutes on commercial TV.
Yeah.
But whatever fit into that slot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and he was the story editor. I don't know if they would call him the showrunner.
Mm-hmm.
And CBS canceled the series in the middle of the third season
mm-hmm.
and ended up showing the final episodes of the third season at 4 a.m. at a time
mm-hmm.
when people, the concept of a DVR did not exist.
Right, yeah.
So you had to manually set your VCR to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're available now, and they're not half bad.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are, in fact, downright good. And then he was going to have his own TV series, Doorways.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
And it was, I would say, it was very Zelazny-esque,
mm-hmm.
like Doorways in the Sand, coincidentally. Mm-hmm. The idea... the Zelazny book has one universe that people go to, but the concept of Doorways was each week they would go to a different universe, a different mm-hmm. place.
Right. The same people?
the same people.
Mm-hmm.
And he was using top-notch writers for this thing, and he had a really good professional SF-approved...
So what happened?
Sliders.
Oh.
Sliders beat Doorways to the airwaves
mm-hmm.
by a matter of months, and Doorways was shelved.
And that's too bad.
Otherwise, I think that would have been the big breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did a movie, or somewhere he did a movie of one of his own novels, Night Flyers.
Night Flyers? That was a novella.
It was a novella. And the movie stunk.
Yeah. He produced it or he directed it?
He wrote it.
Oh, did he?
He wrote the screenplay. He's got, it's mm-hmm. It's like, Gibson wrote.
Johnny Mnemonic?
Yeah. Gibson wrote Johnny Mnemonic. And the Night Flyers started good.
Mm-hmm.
And then, 90 minutes in, somebody said cut to the chase and turned mm-hmm. it into this stupid mm-hmm. horror movie
mm-hmm.
when it was such a great slasher movie, I should
mm-hmm.
say,
mm-hmm.
when it was such a great creepy science fiction mm-hmm. film up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
But then GOT happened. And I'm very pleased. I'm very happy. He's a good person. He deserves all of this success. But it is written with the idea of gratuitous built into it. Gratuitous gore.
The novel, as you mean, or the
TV series?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Gratuitous gore,
mm-hmm.
what I call gornography,
mm-hmm.
which is a phrase that I stole from an article 10 years ago in The Guardian, mm-hmm. referring to, I think, Hostel, mm-hmm. H-O-S-T-E-L. Mm-hmm. Some woman wrote an article, and she referred to it as gornography, and I thought, what a great word.
Mm-hmm.
Gore for the sake of gore.
Right.
Without having any value outside of the fact that it's gory.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of that in Game of Thrones. And, if there's gore and it's serving the story, and there is as of episode one, but that didn't bother me so much.
Mm-hmm.
But close-ups, in this new series, I said the name earlier, The Bastard Executioner.
Yeah.
Which isn't even HBO, it's low standard cable.
Mm-hmm.
It's if you have any cable, you have this station. It's about watching a spear coming out through somebody's eye
yeah.
from the back mm-hmm. in slow-mo.
Well, in the NIC you see surgery all the time, and it gets tiresome. It's like, oh, do bodies really look like that? Do I need to see this?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I don't need to see your surgery. I don't need to see you putting
MASH
a knife
was bad
every
enough.
Time. You know?
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Yeah. My partner, Barbara, turns away from people getting injections.
Mm-hmm.
And
anyway, I'm glad that you've joined the dark side.
I enjoy good horror because as the audio editor of Nightmare Magazine, which is hosted by Jack Kincaid, and the sound is produced by Skyboat Media, mm-hmm. and the magazine is edited by John Joseph Adams, I get more than my share.
Mm-hmm.
And I have discovered the delight of some really fine horror writers out there who transcend their genre.
No, they don't. They are the genre.
Fine.
It really offends me to say that someone transcends the genre. It is the genre. It is part of the genre.
Well, I haven't yet learned enough because there's a lot of stuff in there. Don't listen, John. That really, I just go, ache. And then mm-hmm. I meet these people. There are these lovely people. I meet them at ReaderCon.
Mm-hmm.
And I just look at them and say, You wrote that. You wrote that.
Horror writers smoke a lot too. It's really weird because we had horror writers tonight at KGB, and there were people who came to listen.
This is the KGB Fantastic Fiction series.
Tom Monteleone and Lawrence Connolly read tonight, and Tom Smokes and all these other people. I think Tom Smokes. Now I'm not sure. But there were other people who were there who were horror writers. And,
yeah.
And they were all smoking. It's like, you know, only in horror. Science fiction people stopped smoking. Fantasy people mostly stopped smoking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of surprising.
Yeah. But Maria Devonna Headley, I've learned. I love a lot of her stuff.
She writes. It's not always horror, but she writes some.
No,
horror.
It's not always horror, yeah. But some.
I have a story of hers coming up at tor.com.
Uh huh. And well, there are a few. Curiously, mostly women.
There are fantastic women horror writers who I've been publishing a lot. Priya Sharma, Livia Llewellyn.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Langan, Karen Warren.
Well, I've always liked Sarah Langan. Yeah, I mean, you introduced me to Karen Warren and set me up with her
right,
for an
interview. She's Australian, yeah.
And you
Angela
set me
Slatter,
up with an
Margo
interview.
Lanigan.
Oh, my God, it's next week. Who did you set me up with?
I have no
a
idea.
A great writer.
Male or female?
Female.
I don't know.
She's coming into town with her husband. She lives in Maui.
Oh, Linda Nagata.
Linda Nagata.
And she writes mostly hard science fiction. However, she wrote a really good science fiction horror story that I took for the year's best 2 years ago. That was in, you know, I don't remember
what it
was.
Wasn't it in Nightmare Magazine?
It might have been.
I think I edited the audio version.
Halfway
of
Home.
That.
It was terrific.
Yes.
She doesn't, I mean, as far as she wrote a really good novella for sci-fi.com that won the Nebula, I believe.
Yes.
But what's interesting is she's known as
I think she's gotten two nebulas.
I don't know. But she's known as a science fiction writer, so I was really surprised to find a horror story by her.
Yeah. But no, a few stories of hers have passed through my headphones.
Mm-hmm.
But they are mixed. But I remember a couple of horror stories of hers that were just superb.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have had my list with me, but I can just tell people to go to nightmare-magazine.com for those.
And you can go to tor.com. A lot of the things I publish are horror, although not everything. But I published two really excellent horror stories in the last few months. One by Lucy Taylor, it's a weird title and I can't remember it. In the cave of the something dancers, I think. But anyway, you'll find it if you look up Lucy Taylor on tor.com. And Priya Sharma's Fabulous Beasts, which is really, really disturbing on many levels.
And you introduced me to the work of Rob Sherman.
Rob Sherman's a very weird writer. It's not always horror, but his work has gotten darker.
Even when it is horror, even when it is dark, it's often very entertaining.
Oh, it's always entertaining.
Funny.
It's very weird, too.
I mean, the fact that he is able to walk that line in
well,
the
usually,
horror.
Most horror, I don't usually like humorous horror at all, because I find the humor dissipates the horror. So those stories, for me, are usually not horror. They may be dark fantasy. The ones that were weird.
Well, of the two stories that he read in this very building at 388 mm-hmm. Atlantic Avenue a couple of months ago, facilitated by you.
Mm. I'm blanking. I don't remember what he read.
He read the Snoopy story.
Okay.
Snoopy's Dead story.
Okay.
And just the idea mm-hmm. there repelled mm-hmm. so many people that it has an element of horror right there. And then there was the one about the airplane, you know, that it is horror.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember it.
It is comedy. Well, I can tell listeners, if you want to watch Ellen introduce Rob reading. Whatever he read. You can go to livestream.com, click on watch, and do a search for NYRSF.
New York Review of Science Fiction.
Right, but... Right. The NYRSF right. is NYRSF. What, if yeah. you type in New York Review of Science Fiction,
no,
you
know.
Won't get it.
Yeah, NYRSF.
Yeah, and by the way, this is to remind people, in case you haven't been hit enough with this, tomorrow at 7 p.m. on livestream.com, Uprising of the Downtrodden.
What's that?
That's a live radio drama being put together by Anthony Sloan, former arts director of WBAI, mm-hmm. currently visiting from Johannesburg.
Mm.
And it's like everybody seems to be involved in this, including somehow me. Only I'm not. I'm an actor in this. I've got like five lines or something,
right. Yeah.
Which I haven't read yet. Mm-hmm. But all I know is I show up here tomorrow for rehearsal at 5:30, and it goes live on WBAI and live on live stream at 7 p.m. So people should check that out. I think the best thing to do a search for on live stream is Commons Brooklyn or Brooklyn Commons. Sometimes on Facebook, it's Commons Brooklyn. Mm. But I think on live stream, maybe Brooklyn Commons. I don't know. But it will be fun. But since we were mentioning that, let's dial back a little, okay? Let's give some of your history. You are a short story editor.
Yes. I have edited novels, but not many.
Right. But your niche, your bailiwick,
is short fiction.
Is short fiction. And you have done so in various venues since, what, the late
70s? 1979 to 80.
I would call that the late
70s. I'm trying to remember. I always forget when I started at Omni.
Yeah, and that was Omni magazine right through its demise.
Around 1996.
Right, including an online version.
For a couple of years, yeah.
And then for a while.
A year and a half, Event Horizon, Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror, which was an online zine with fiction, nonfiction articles, round robins, live chats.
It had
reviews, all kinds of stuff.
I alternated live chats with Ed Bryant. I had so much fun with that. It had one huge major problem.
Which what?
It was about 15 years ahead of its time.
Well, we had no money.
Yes, but today somebody would be able to do it as a startup. It would have sponsors. The web was too young. And people didn't understand the concept of an online zine.
It's still making money is problematic on the web. I mean, it's, you know, no one's making a fortune.
Nobody's making a fortune.
But people have learned to monetize it a bit.
Magazine and at Clark's World and at some of the other.
There are different ways to do it. I mean, some people still do fundraising. Some people do Kickstarters. Some people do subscriptions. Of course, e-books have made a big difference because people can put their stories, you know, put everything that was on the webzine into an ebook and sell them that way. So that's really what's going on.
Yeah.
That's what's been going on. But I still think it's really tough. You know, advertising, people do advertise online. I don't know the figures of what's made online for those.
Yeah,
I
don't know the numbers, but when I announce Lightspeed Magazine every issue, every week, I say a sponsor, which is often Tor.com, in fact. So you indirectly have been one of our chief sponsors.
What do you mean? They put money in? I have no idea.
I don't know what the financial arrangements are.
All I know is that
I have my script, and I send an email to John Joseph Adams, and I say, who's the sponsor this month? And he says, our friends at Tor.com. So I say, Lightspeed Magazine this month is sponsored by our friends at Tor.com.
I have no
Beyond
idea.
Beyond this, I know nothing.
Yeah, I know nothing either since I don't work for them.
I'm
a freelancer.
Got it. So it's very indirect. And I don't work. You know, I'm a freelance audio editor and host.
Yeah. So you don't know either.
So I don't know either. I don't know either or either.
I don't know where it goes or where it comes from.
But I do know that it gets mentioned.
Yeah.
So that somehow, somewhere, somebody is doing a favor, either financial or otherwise, for another.
Yeah.
So but the point is, there is a sponsorship. And online zines at this point do exist.
Oh, yeah.
As do podcasts. As do ebooks. And at the time that you were putting out Event Horizon, you were on the Event Horizon. You were the singularity. You were there before And
well, when we were at Omni, we did that. Omni Online started it all.
That's really true.
I mean, I'm not saying we're the only people who did that online, but it was before Event Horizon. We did conventions online. At Omni, we created EOSCon 1 and 2,
yeah,
which was an online convention we created for the EOS, the publisher, the science fiction.
I stayed awake for 36 hours.
I was at Rob Kilheffer's house having a cat hang onto my arm with his claws.
Yes.
And trying to talk on the, trying to type with one hand or eat lunch. I can't remember why we were all there. We were all on the same computer, and I'm trying to get the cat off my arm.
There were like 8 rooms, and I think I had one or two of them or something like that.
Yeah, so that was weird. But no, we started the online, Omni Online started doing fiction. We had nonfiction. We had, we didn't have reviews, but we had the round, that's where I started the round robins, but it was done in such a primitive way at the time. I'd have 5 writers and have them post 200 words or something, and then a next person would create a story.
Yeah.
And I'd started it there, and then we continued that at Event Horizon. But a lot of the stuff we did at Event Horizon, we started at Omni.
Right. And Event Horizon eventually became a startup that didn't.
Well, I don't know if you call it a startup, but yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
it was a year and a half we did it.
In the tech world, we call it a startup.
Yeah, and we had advertising, but we couldn't get the money from the advertisers.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't have a dedicated ad person. You know, it was 4 of us who had worked at Omni and trying to figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, Rob and I were the actual editors, and Pam and Kathy Stein were working behind the scenes, and they were trying to make money for us, but they didn't.
Yeah. The web was too new, and people...
Well, we didn't know what...
Working in computer journals at that time, and in fact, my partner, she's been editor of some major, major computer magazines, and I was working for ZipNet, which... is not to be confused with ZDNet. ZipNet were the Ziff Davis magazines, yes, but it was a part of CompuServe and all that. And the salespeople, who were very accomplished salespeople for some PC magazine for years, was in the top 10 selling magazines of all magazines in the world. They had no idea how to sell online.
That's what was so frustrating for Omni. I mean, we had all these, we had advertising in the magazine, but no one would even figure out how to put an ad on the website to just even do nothing and bring money in. I mean, it just wasn't, it was like hitting your head against a wall.
Yeah.
No one had a clue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we could have at least.
And when people finally figured out obnoxious banner ads, then you had blockers.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then came sci fiction.
Yes. Yeah, that was, it was originally The Dominion, it was called.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah,
yes.
Right when I got there, it was changed to sci-fi.com, but before that, it was The Dominion. Now, right after Omni, actually, I think it was, Craig Engler and Sean Redlitz approached me about doing something for The Dominion. And doing fiction, and we want to expand and this and that and the other thing. I said, yeah, this is what I do. When anyone comes with me with an idea, it's like, sure, tell me when you're ready, and sure, I'll think about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Come back. And during that time, I was working on Event Horizon for a year and a half. Well, fortuitously, is the correct word, just as we were closing down Event Horizon, they came back to me and said, well, would you want to work for us? I said, yeah, sure. And we figured out, we came up with the name Sci Fiction to go with sci-fi.com.
And this is before there was the letter Y.
Yes, before the Y.
I call it syphilis.
Right, whatever you want to call it,
Right.
But they
Craig
were expanding.
They
had all kinds of great stuff on it. They had animation. Mm. They had audio drama. They were truly trying to do everything. It was supposed to be the online presence of the Sci-Fi Channel, and they had a lot of money, and they were spending it, and they were doing all these wrong things, like buying companies and for millions of dollars that they didn't know what to do with, and which, of course, did nothing. So they spent all this money.
It was Universal.
Yeah.
I mean, as in it was the
I know,
company.
That's yeah. what everyone...
Well, I'm explaining
no,
to
no,
listeners.
No, it was not Universal then.
It was before
oh, no.
Universal?
It was bought four times while I was there.
Oh, my God.
I don't remember who owned it when I started. But no, it was like four times at least. I mean, it was Universal, then I mean, yeah. Barry Diller, GE. I mean, eventually GE owns it now, I think. I don't even remember.
Really?
But it went through four owners.
Well, who owns the channel? NBC.
GE. GE owns NBC then?
I don't know. Well, there was a time when GE owned NBC, but I believe
I'm still
they,
getting, I'm getting a pension.
I believe they sold
I have pension
it.
Money from GE, and that's attached to...
Oh, okay.
So
that,
I don't
yeah,
know.
There may
so
be a deal.
I really don't
All
remember.
I can tell you
All I know is it kept...
Is
anyway.
That the Syphilis Channel today, the TV
I know.
Channel...
I know what it is today.
...is part of NBC.
Okay. Then GE owns NBC.
Could
or they
be.
Did. I don't know.
I think they did.
I think
and
maybe they still do. Who knows?
And they may be still responsible
Or did Comcast
some...
buy them? Anyway, it's a mess. But,
it's a mess.
But anyway, at the time, they were expanding, and they wanted to do all the stuff, and fiction was part of it, and it was great. And then over time, I mean, I was there 6 years, and I was able to pay people very well. I've been very
And you're
lucky.
Able to publish some brilliant, yeah. brilliant fiction.
Yeah, I mean, I was first time I was able to publish novellas, first time I had room for them, which was great. And so we published a bunch of novellas, and at least one or two won awards. And it was great fun. And I also did publish a lot of reprints, old classics we published. And that was hard. You know, we did it. I mean, it was really hard, the production schedule. It was like once a week, and I was the only person. I was working there, and I had someone who was freelance copy editing and freelance proofreading and a production person who was also working with nonfiction. It was just really hard to do that by yourself. And it was exhausting, I have to say. But I did it for 6 years, and then they started contracting. First off, the guy who... had started buying all the one who was brought in, this young, smart guy who was buying all these things for a lot of money and threw out all this money, basically,
mm-hmm.
was fired, of course.
Of course.
And then...
This is the big corporate world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then over time, it started contracting until finally... Fiction was the last thing to go. No, actually, Scott Edelman... what was it called? Craig started it. Craig started the news
Craig
thing.
Engler's,
Craig
yeah.
Engler started the news thing. I forget what the heck it was called.
It wasn't Buzz.
No. I hope, Craig, if you're on listening, don't be mad that I can't remember the name of your... You can call it. Well, you can't call it. We're not doing call-ins.
You
but
can
you,
send,
can,
Craig,
you can email me later.
Yeah, or you can email me. You
if,
know my email
if you're
address.
Up. I can't remember. Anyway, it was the news thing. It was a news thing, and Scott Edelman took that over.
That's right.
That was the only thing after fiction that... was left.
Yeah.
I mean, fiction, you know, they got rid of the
audio.
And that
actually wasn't bad what they did there.
No,
yeah.
until they changed it.
Yeah.
You know.
And they killed Seeing Ear Theater. They tried,
yes, that's...
They tried to get rid of the original stories that were being bought for that and tried to create their own series.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Written by J. Michael Straczynski.
Oh.
And they were putting that down the throat, I should say, mm-hmm. of the producer who I shouldn't name, but is now with Bain Books.
Oh. What drove me nuts, what drove me, oh, I know who you're talking about. What drove me nuts.
We used to do a regular
yeah,
part
what,
of Hour
what,
of the Wolf.
What drove me nuts was that they had First Look, I mean, NBC had, and the Sci-Fi Channel had First Look of all the stories we published. I mean, they couldn't. You know, they had to negotiate if they wanted something.
Mm-hmm.
But they had First Look, and they did nothing with hundreds of stories I published, new
yeah.
stories, you know, over 6 years.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what a waste. You know, here they had all this stuff they could have used, that they could have had material.
Yeah, but and by the way, it is NBC Universal.
Now.
Is the owner at this time.
Okay, and does GE own them?
That I am not, you
know. See, I can't remember how GE's related.
At a time, yes, because remember the whole famous thing with David Letterman trying to shake hands with the GE people
no,
and
I
they
don't
slipped.
That.
Oh, yes, yes.
I don't watch TV. I wouldn't
know. Yes, at a time, I don't know about today, and I'm not sure that they
mm-hmm.
do own it
mm-hmm.
today, but there was a time that GE owned NBC.
Okay, and then I think Comcast bought it all.
I think that's right.
So Comcast may own everything now.
Damn, except WBAI in New York City.
Yeah. So anyway, yes, I worked there for 6 years.
Yes.
And since then, that was in 2005, I guess, or the end of 2005.
And the very year, may I point out, the very year that they just dumped, I can say this, Sci Fiction, I think you had something like between the Nebulas and the Hugos 4 nominations and 1-2.
I really don't remember.
I mean, it was a banner year. It was really...
But that's irrelevant to what they were doing, because what they did is now it's all support of the channel. It's nothing... They wanted to be what Tor.com is now.
Yes.
And they wanted to be the place to go for science fiction and fantasy people. And then they just gave that up. They realized they weren't going to make money out of it, and they wanted to just support the channel.
Yeah.
Whichever bosses were at the time, you know, as it changed, went up the chain or down the chain. So anyway.
Put that in the past. From there, you went to?
Well, there I was working freelance. I've been doing anthologies. Original anthologies and the year's best every year. I mean, I've been doing a year's best of some sort since 1988.
Starting out with a combo year's best
fantasy
horror
and horror.
Fantasy
and horror.
Working with Terry Wendling.
First for 16 years.
Right.
And then for, I guess, 5 years I did it with with Gavin Grant and Kelly Link, although we never conferred. I mean, it was always they got half the wordage and I got half the wordage. Mm-hmm. I got the horror and they did the fantasy.
Right.
But now I'm on number 7 of the best horror of the year, which is from Nightshade Books, that's just out. And I've been doing that myself for 7 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no fantasy, but horror.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing original...
And the
original
proper full title of that for
the
those...
The best horror of the year,
Martin
Volume
Kale
7.
Will kill me if... Okay.
No, yeah, he's not working there anymore.
Really? That's mm-hmm. recent.
Yes. Last week.
Oh, my duck.
No, anyway...
I like him.
He's a sweetie, and he's looking for a job.
Okay, so if anybody listening.
Publicist, you need a good publicist, a publisher, hire this guy, Martin Cahill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He comes to the Nursef readings. He
comes
probably
to KGB
comes to the
sometimes.
KGB readings.
Yeah, he couldn't make it this month.
Yeah, and he couldn't make it this month to ours either, although he wanted to.
Yeah.
But he was one who sent me an email, 4 or 5 months ago, saying,
mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Do you know this? There's an editor by the name of Ellen Datlow. Have you ever heard of her? G. Martin. Let me think about that. Well, I do the New York Review of Science Fiction reading series, and she does the KGB Fantastic Fiction. Is that the Ellen Datlow you're talking about? The person whose mother's computer I helped fix? The person
by phone, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But anyway, I had
a wonderful time talking to her. She's quite a character.
Yeah. Yeah, her computer dropped dead on her, but she got it to come back, thank God. I said, you need a new one if it's doing that.
Yes.
You know, if it just drops dead for no reason, I think it's time. She said, I don't want to spend a lot of money. I said, when I'm down there, maybe we can figure something out. She said, it's working now. I said, but what it did is not a good sign,
she
Mom.
She doesn't want to spend money, and for what she does, I have one word.
What?
Chromebook.
Really?
Yeah. We'll talk.
All right. I'm going down Friday, so you got to tell me soon. Email me or something.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so I've been doing freelance
it's
anthology.
Not Windows, not Apple.
I've been doing anthologies all along, but
yes.
I was doing that completely.
Including
for
that wonderful
years.
Fairy tale series that you've been doing with.
Well, those were a long time ago.
Yeah, you haven't been
the fairy
those out
tale
lately.
Ones not since 93. We did the
that long ago.
Yeah, yeah, in 94, I think. But
how
anyway,
long have I known you? So over
a
30
long
years.
Time.
Over 30 years.
We did the Mythic series, which is YA, and that was more recent.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, but anyway.
And I think in my head I was going, Wendling Datlow,
right.
Wendling,
yeah.
And that to me is simply a branding in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And you can call it YA, doesn't matter, I'm going to gobble it up.
Good. Not enough people did, though, but that's okay.
Mm.
But anyway, so I've been working with Tor.com, Irene Gallo, who is the editor of, I'm not sure what her title is, but she runs Tour.com,
she
the
is
website.
Tour. Yeah, yeah.
And she's the art director for Tour. She's a brilliant art director.
Yeah,
and
I got confused by that for a while.
Right. Well, she runs the Tour.com. And so she asked if I want... At first, she hired Ann Vandermeer to freelance a choir for them. And then a few months later, she asked if I would. And I said, yes, I've been waiting. I was hoping you would ask. I'd love to. So basically, I acquire and edit stories for Tour.com occasionally. And I just have I have a novella in the novella series by Victor Laval that's coming out in February. A Lovecraftian novella that is really pretty interesting. It's from a young black man's point of view, and it takes place in 1920s, if I have the right decade. And it's Lovecraftian. And Victor talks about, he was asked to make a statement. It reflects his love-hate relationship with Lovecraft.
Yeah, which as we just passed Lovecraft's 125th birthday about a month ago.
Yeah.
And we did a show here, and I had to talk about his story, The Horror of Red Hook, which was not about it was partly about his hatred of Brooklyn, but his reference to the mud people and his extreme racism and what an unpleasant man.
I'm talking about Lovecraft, not Victor, by the way.
Oh, God, no.
Just
no,
clarify.
Sorry, Lovecraft. I met Lovecraft's wife.
You did?
I did. I didn't even appreciate it at the time.
Well, I've read about her. She sounded really fascinating.
Sonia Green, yeah.
Yeah. There's a fabulous new nonfiction book by Yoshi, who's an expert in Lovecraft. It came out last year, and I can't remember the title of it. Maybe Letters.
I remember the one by Sprague de Camp.
It's a really good, big book, and it talks about, I think it's by Yoshi, this one, but it has letters from Sonia and about their relationship. It's very interesting. It's fascinating. It goes into Lovecraft and his letters to other people and just all kinds of things much deeper than I don't read all this stuff. I'm not interested usually in the scholarship.
I'm going to ask you to just talk for a couple of minutes because Lister, who's supposed to be here, I just missed a phone call from him, so I want to find out.
Who's Lister?
Lister is the person who's on the air at 3 a.m.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right, so you want me to blather? Okay.
Yeah, blather.
All right, so anyway, it's a really good book, and I think it's by S.T. Yoshi, who is an expert on Lovecraft.
Here's a voicemail. I can read that. We've only mentioned the Doll Collection and the Year's Best Horror.
And I have a new book coming out.
There we go.
October 27th, The Monstrous from Tachyon. Tachyon is fabulous. They're fabulous
That's
for many
Jacob
reasons.
Jacob Weissman has been a guest on this show.
Yes, and one of the reasons they're fabulous, and Jacob, if you're listening because it's 3 hours early, maybe you are.
Or maybe you're listening to the on demand.
Who knows? But anyway.
Because the show's available.
Let me talk. You listen to that. Let me talk. So anyway, Jacob lets me do kind of, we discuss a theme. I only do reprint anthologies for him, but he's really easygoing about trying to figure out, okay, what's a good theme? And I always want a theme that's broad enough to do what I love doing, which is have my writers push against a theme. You know, buy stories that are not necessarily obviously on a theme or not, you know, but they... To me, if I can justify it, I can say, okay, this is this kind of story. So I've done several anthologies for Jacob, and the newest one is called The Monstrous. And the last one I did for him, Lovecraft's Monsters, was illustrated by John Coulthart. Each monster was illustrated with a different picture, and John also did the cover. And now with The Monstrous,
now
he's going to... What? Am I on?
You are on, and you're going to be the only thing that's on because Lister's locked out of the building. I have to go downstairs and let him in.
All right.
Okay, so
bring me back some water when you come back.
I'll do that.
I'm thirsty.
Yes.
Okay, so here I am. I'm in charge. I can't believe it. Okay. Anyway, The Monstrous.
You know all about the seven words. You can recite them.
So with The Monstrous, that's going to be illustrated by John also, although he did not do the cover. So that's... The the idea of having my story, the stories that I pick illustrated, is really fabulous, especially by someone like John. But also they're very good at marketing and at publicity, and that's very unusual for any kind of publisher, for anyone who's interested in publishing. Anyway, The Monstrous is all reprints, but one original by John Langan. And the idea is not just monster stories, but stories that express what is monstrous about creatures, but also monstrous about people and how the interaction works. And so that's what I tried to do, and it was a lot of fun. And we've gotten some good reviews. And I haven't seen all the illustrations that John's done, but it's going to be fabulous. I mean, he does the black and white illustrations, and he's really talented. It's C-O-U-L-T-H-A-R-T if you want to ever look him up. So that's what I've got coming out October 27th. Just in time. I don't know what else to say. So I was talking a little about the monstrous.
Thank you for the water.
And Lister is in the building. Mm-hmm. He just figured out his way in as
okay.
I got
that. So you missed it, or you'll have to listen to it on radio.
Yes.
I said.
Well, we're on delay, but anyway. And there he is.
Hi there.
You've met Ellen before. Lister Ellen, Ellen Lister. So
that's coming out the 27th, and I said it's illustrated. Each story is illustrated, and one original.
Tweet.
I love tweeting.
Yeah.
I
read a story about you in IO9 about tweeting.
Yes. Well, actually.
Twick or tweet.
Yeah. No, don't say that.
Anyway,
Jonathan Strawn, who is an editor of the best
science fiction.
Is it science fiction and fantasy? And I can't remember. There are many different variations of the titles. I can't remember. It's the year's best. I don't know if it's called the year's. He's Australian, but he picks the year's best science fiction and fantasy, I think. It is fantasy. He includes it. So,
okay.
Anyway, he came up with the idea that all the year's best editors, and there are many, there are several different kinds of year's best for genre, different genre material, that we should all tweet our recommend stories. Partly everything that's been going on in the science fiction field, there's so much being published in the short fiction that a lot of people aren't aware of what's out there. And so no one knows where to find material to, the best things to read, or even things that they may enjoy. So Jonathan decided to get all the year's best editors together and have us recommend stories as we read them. And that's what we've been doing. We just started that about a week ago, and it's on Twitter under SF Editors Picks, I think. And it's also it goes simultaneously on Facebook and Twitter. And the participants are, I mean, we asked everybody. A couple of people said that they didn't want to do it. We have Paula Garan, Jonathan Strawn, David A. with a long thing, the guy who's doing the best military fiction. I don't know how to pronounce his
name.
Yeah,
I don't know his work.
Rich Horton. Neil Clark, he's doing a best of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Kelly, who does best weird fiction.
Neil Clark is doing a best of the year?
Yeah. I don't remember.
For somebody.
For Nightshade. He's doing a best science fiction for Nightshade.
Okay.
And I can't remember if there's any. Liz Grieb.
Yes.
Grieb, however you pronounce it. She's Australian.
That's a new name for me.
Yeah, and I forget who she co-edits with, and the best, it might be, I don't know if Russ is going to do it, so I think Liz is going to be doing it, and did I forget anyone? I think those are the people who said yes. I mean, a couple mm-hmm. of people said no, and so we just started doing that about a week ago, and IO9 covered it, mentioned it. It's not just science fiction, it's science fiction, fantasy, and horror, although
right.
it's called
It's SF what it's what I call the genre.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we just, we're hoping that we just want to give recommendations of what we like,
And it is science fiction and fantasy
and horror.
No, I mean strands.
Oh, thank
I'm
you.
Sorry.
Sorry. Yes.
I'm a bit behind because I was just looking it up.
Takes horror. I mean, I can't believe it. He took something. I was really annoyed because I felt it was stepping on my toes, and I don't remember what
Ooh.
Story it was because it was horror. I said, that is not fantasy. Why are you taking that? How dare you?
That's another discussion, which, in fact, we've had on previous shows. are the defining lines, and the answer is sometimes they're not that easily defined.
I think between dark fantasy and horror there is, but if you're doing an anthology of fantasy and science fiction, and are other people doing horror, then why would you want to cross that particular boundary?
Yeah, all I know is that a writer with whom I am familiar ended up getting an honorable mention, actually, for 3 stories in 1 year in the year's Best Horror.
Yeah.
And this writer says to me, I don't write horror. And
apparently that person does.
And apparently that...
Some people have no clue what they're writing.
Right.
Anyway.
They're writing stories.
Well, no.
They're writing fiction.
But they don't know. They think they're writing horror, and they're not. There's a difference between... I mean, there are writers who I work with, who I publish sometimes, who are writing weird fiction. I mean, I'm having a discussion in Brooklyn in a few weeks with Patrick McGraw and Peter Joseph. Patrick McGraw is a writer. He wrote Spider. He wrote... great stuff. Grotesque.
Right. The way that you say that you're having a conversation with them, that means that this is something that...
It's going to be something we're discussing.
That people can see.
How weird fiction overlaps with dark fantasy and horror.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and what that all means. And that's going to be in Brooklyn at the Montauk Club. It may be September 30th.
Lovely space for people who have not been to the Montauk Club. Very historic, wonderful old building.
Yes.
At the edge of the slope.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I've had many discussions with people about dark fantasy and weird fiction and horror. And, for example, there are writers who I love. I mean, Robert Sherman is one we were talking about.
Yeah.
A lot of his stuff is weird fiction, what I would consider weird.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not necessarily horror fiction.
Right.
But some of it is horror fiction. And, you know, it's on a story-by-story basis. It's complete. And same thing with Helen Marshall. She writes a lot of weird fiction. She rarely, in my mind, writes horror fiction. Angela Slatter writes a lot of dark fantasy. Once in a while, it goes into horror. But usually it's dark fantasy to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was my point?
The intersection. Where were we before that?
So we're recommending. I mean, so we'll overlap occasionally. You know, I mean, I guess Jonathan could say the same thing when I took Linda Nagata's story that was science fiction horror, because science fiction horror is something that's been around for years, decades. I mean... You know, The Fly.
But
all kinds of things are.
Yeah, I mean, to me,
who goes there?
To my way of thinking, exactly.
Yeah.
Who goes there is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. It's hard science fiction. It's also horror. Many people say, "Oh, you know, great horror story / movie," because they think of it as the thing from another world.
Well, I'm more interested in the Carpenter one. It's much more, I think,
horrifying.
Oh, absolutely, and
and it
true
is.
To the book.
However, I'm blanking on the name of the real director of the first one, not Christian Eibe, but
I know who you mean.
Howard Hawks.
Yes,
Howard Hawks, who really directed that in the same way that Steven Spielberg, I think, is really directed Poltergeist, as opposed to Toby Hooper, and. But one way or the other, Who Goes There is a classic example of a science fiction story.
Yeah, and I have no mouth. Horror. I have no mouth, and I'm a scream.
Yes, very much so.
I mean, there's a lot of science fiction horror, and it is one of the types of subgenres of horror.
But you see, and this is something that you and I had a discussion on 15 years ago, something like that. Which is, I asked you what is horror, and you just sort of looked at me like I was a bug or something, and said horror is something that gives you horror when you encounter it, when you read it. And I thought, okay.
It's very different from any other kind of genre.
It is, but my question, and I'm still not fully clear on this, and you're going to look at me, you can give me that look again, as everybody on the radio can see, is that yes, but...
It's the way you feel. It's the way it makes you feel.
Right. It's the way that it makes you feel.
And it makes you feel... I mean, some people...
So you can have science fiction comedy. You can have... You know, in other words, it's an emotion to me.
Right. But it's not... Science fiction isn't the emotion.
I mean, science fiction is the genre.
Uh-huh.
And
but that's why horror is not is barely a genre. It depends on how you define genre. Horror can be within any other genre.
No, well, that was exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. That's why it's not really a genre.
That's
the way it affects you. I mean, the only thing like that is pornography.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, no, I would
horror,
say...
Seriously. I mean, I eroticism, say, you know, and...
Comedy.
And, yeah, I guess it's supposed to make you laugh, yeah.
Comedy is supposed to make you laugh. It might be satirical. It might be whatever.
Yeah.
But I would say that I'm sure there's comedy, horror, pornography. But
yes, probably.
I'm sure there is. If not, somebody will.
But I mean, there are also different camps in horror. I mean, some people think that it's not horror if it doesn't make you scared, if it doesn't scare you.
Mm.
And I'll maintain that nothing scares me in fiction.
Yeah.
So I don't look for that. I mean, to me, it's yes, it'll give me a feeling unease. I'll feel really creeped out. I'll find it really disturbing. It'll stick with me, and I'll find it really difficult to read, perhaps, to continue reading.
There was,
but it's not going to scare me.
Yeah, there was a story that was, in fact, the current podcast story of Nightmare Magazine. So to me, that's already 3 weeks ago that I worked on it. That is theoretically horror that I found soothing.
What story?
That
it's not horror if it's soothing. Ghost stories that
a ghost story.
No, I'm just saying ghost stories don't have to be horror.
Like the Canterville Ghost.
Right, which I don't remember, but yeah.
The Oscar Wilde.
I did a ghost story anthology, The Dark, my intention was to have creepy ghost stories that would disturb you rather than moving ones. I mean, there are a lot of ghost stories that are very moving, they're heartbreaking, but they aren't horror. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's just different. You know, and what I tried and hoped I succeeded in doing for The Dark was have, I mean, there were some stories that were moving, but they were still creepy.
Yeah. And I'm slowly but surely, I'm trying to find out exactly what that story
is. If it's soothing, it's not horror.
Well,
horror doesn't soothe.
Well, okay, maybe that's the wrong word, soothing. It wasn't truly
And there's a difference between dark fantasy and horror, and I've been trying to define that for a few years, and I kind of have it. I'm not sure I can define it, but I can explain it.
Okay, yes. It was called 10 Things to Know About the 10 Questions by Gwendolyn Keist.
I think I read that. Did it just come out recently?
It's this week's podcast and story, feature story.
Yeah, I think
at Nightmare Magazine.
I think I can't swear to it, but I don't think it's horror.
I can see where you would say that
and
because
actually,
it did
I don't
not.
I think they publish a lot of horror. A lot of their stories to me are dark fantasy. Not the reprint. Don't forget, I don't read the reprints. I've probably read them already because they've taken me them from a lot of my anthologies.
That's right.
So I don't read the reprints, but a lot of the stories they pub, and also and I'm a lot of the Lightspeed stories are dark fantasy.
Well, Lightspeed, don't forget, includes Fantasy Magazine.
I know, but sometimes their stuff is darker than what's in Nightmare.
I agree.
So,
I think that is true this very week, that this week's Lightspeed podcast, which came out on Tuesday, was darker than the story by Gwendolyn Keist, which came out on Wednesday.
Yeah, so I don't really get, I don't understand how John delineates the two magazines that well, because it just seems to...
For all I know, the answer is budget.
How would that make a difference?
I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense. Forget that. Forget what he said. That makes no sense. I'm sure he has the same budget for both magazines. He could do a story that's darker. Well, maybe he just not isn't getting the darkest stories. I don't know. I mean, I just don't know.
No.
Yeah. And of course, everyone's a critic. You know, people say, "Well, the stories that I publish aren't horror. They're not dark enough to be horror, or they're not They don't scare me. Again, they don't scare me. I said, well, I'm sorry they don't scare me. They don't scare me. No story. You find a story. There is not a story around.
Okay, and actually, looking at the subtitle of Nightmare, it's horror and dark fantasy.
Oh, okay. Well, that's better.
That's the subtitle.
Okay, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah. And Lightspeed is science fiction and fantasy. Okay. I think by that they tend to mean closer to high fantasy.
Yeah, but some of their stuff is dark.
Very dark. Some of it. So, there's a Maria Devana Headley story that I think.
Which one?
A
new one?
No. No, it was about a year and a half ago. And for me, there comes a point. I don't know how you manage to keep this stuff in your head straight. I do 3 stories every 2 weeks. And I cannot. I have to look at a list to remember what's what.
I do, too. I mean, when I have to put...
You're reading everything.
When I edit an anthology, I have to go back. I mean, I'll remember the stories once I edit them, usually. I mean, I'm usually reading stories I've bought if they're original stories. Now, this is not for the year's best, but for original stories, I'll have edited them several times. I have gone over them and reread them several times, so hopefully by the time I'm ready to figure out the table of contents, I can remember just by looking at the first line. Sometimes the titles, you know, just like, I don't remember what that's about. That has nothing to do with the story. So I have to, like, maybe look at the first line. Oh, yeah, I remember that story. So I have to figure out, you know, the order. I don't want to have to reread the whole story. It's like, I don't remember this story. What was it about again? You know,
But
with reprints, that might happen more often, although not with the year's best, because, again, with the year's best, I reread them over and over again. The reason I do is because it's a process of elimination. By the end of the year, or near the end of the year, I have enough stories to fill 2 anthologies of the best of the year. So I have to cut out half those stories, which means I have to read the stories and reread until I cut enough out to have what I have, what's left.
Now, is that what ends up becoming a lot of the honorable mentions?
Now I only do the honorable mentions. Only 50 or 100 show up in the actual anthology, in the book.
Right.
I actually have to someplace post the other ones, the ones that don't end up. The ones that end up in the print are usually the ones that were, they all the ones that didn't make the final cut would be in there.
Right.
And a few others. But the whole
that was
list,
the impression
But the
I
whole
had.
List is as I read, I will put an asterisk by things. No, I mean, I'll put something on my recommendation list if I liked it. But if I liked it
so
a
it's
lot,
actually sort
if
of
I like it and consider it, then it'll have an asterisk by it. And then
okay.
Then I have to go back and that's when I count up all the wordage for the asterisk.
So it's
story.
Actually sort of 3 tiers.
Yeah.
There's the I bought this tier, the I like a bigger word count tier, mm-hmm. and there's the I recommend this tier.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like that because I used to have all of them in the book, but I finally got persuaded that, no, you're taking up too much space. Get rid of 500 of those.
Ouch.
Or 1,000 of those.
Yeah.
It's like, all right.
I'm at this buffet. Everything's good.
Yeah, I know. But I want to recommend them all. But, yeah, I think I have to. People really want to know. And it's a good thing to have them because it shows the diversity of what's out there as far as how many types of markets there are.
Yeah.
And so I do think it's important, you know, because if I recommend Stoneman's story, it means I like it enough to recommend it or I wouldn't because I probably read at least 10 times as many as I recommend.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have to post that someplace. I used to do it on my blog, but I guess I could. I mean, I have a blog on my website, which I don't do anything with.
Which is datlow.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so what? Maybe I'll post. I mean, I have to do it in 3 shots or, you know, I can't do them all in one long thing.
Right.
And then they'll show up on Facebook and Twitter anyway as links. Ugh.
Yeah, but you said that the
maybe
prob-
I can delete it from Twitter after it goes.
The problem with today's blogs and blogware is that stuff disappears, that it's all timely, and the old stuff.
Not in a blog.
Absolutely in a blog.
On my blog? Part of my website? It doesn't
go away. You're doing what? WordPress?
I think so.
Yeah, something like that. Yes, there are archives all the way down, but you can't just see immediately. Oh, here's a given topic.
Yeah, but
you have
I don't
to know
blog
to
very often. I mean, I hardly blog at all.
Yeah, but this is a general thing in blogware, mm-hmm. and here I'm speaking as a technology mm-hmm. person as opposed to
right.
a blogger, which I am not.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, it's sort of what I'm doing right now. My radio show is my voice blog.
Mm.
And the...
Your blog.
Vlog, yes. Mm. Vlog sounds like, you know... The Vlog the Impaler, or something like that. We have only about 5 minutes left, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And in that time, we need each to promote certain things. So I'll go first.
Okay.
The next reading of, I'm so sorry that, you know, I'm on Wednesday nights, which has two problems. Number one, I can't tell you tomorrow night, go to 85 East 4th Street so you can see the wonderful performance of, people at the KGB mm-hmm. Fantastic Fiction. It's get your time machine, go back about, 8 hours.
It'll be on our website in a few days, though.
Right. But the other reading series in mm-hmm. New York that is now at 388 Atlantic Avenue on October 10th.
Mm-hmm.
are two people, and one of them sort of segues into the KGB. One of the people is Brooke Bolander, whose work I was not familiar with until mm-hmm. I audio edited a story of hers mm-hmm. for Lightspeed, and I'm still laughing over that one. It was mm-hmm. I love her stuff. And then Matthew Kressel, whose first novel is coming out, who just happens to be the co-curator, co-editor, co-host mm-hmm. of the KGB Fantastic Fiction series. No, you take it.
No, this is separate. It's something what you said before that I just twigged to.
Oh, okay. Well, so just October 10th,
okay.
388 Atlantic Avenue. Admission is free. Donations are begged upon until we do our fundraiser, which will be in December, and it will be available on live stream live.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have to come because our last one, the live stream, went over fine according to Matthew, but the archive of it stutters.
Oh no!
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So we don't have a record of it.
By the way, so is Linda Nagata going to be on your show?
I'm recording an interview with her next
good.
Week.
Yeah, I told her to contact you.
Yes.
Good. That's yes. what I just realized you said that. It's like, yeah, good, she did contact
me. Yes, she did contact me. We're good. Setting something right. up. I also set something up with, I didn't even know, I shouldn't say on the air, that a particular horror writer who I mentioned earlier lives in Brooklyn. I had no idea. Maria Devana Headley. Okay. But I shouldn't say that on the air. So I'll be setting up an interview with her. And in October, when we're pitching, I'll be going to Capclave.
Mm-hmm.
And every time, I don't go to that many cons. I basically do ReaderCon and Capclave. You'll be going, of course, to World Fantasy. And I always get about 4 or 5 interviews at every con I go to. And okay. I've got so much stuff in the can to broadcast, including, I mean, great stuff, James Morrow,
mm-hmm.
people like that. So that's sort of my announcement. I'm here next week, and I don't even remember with what. After that, I think I'm off to Capclave
mm-hmm.
for a week, and then, and Lister is on, but I'm not, gets confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following week, I'm on, but Lister isn't.
Okay.
Why, we're alternating, I don't know why. But you at the next KGB Fantastic Fiction reading,
we'll have Fran Wild and Nathan Ballingrud.
Yeah, yes, I'm PO'd about that.
Why?
You've had two people who you I wanted mm-hmm. both AC Wise and Fran Wild for Nursif readings,
mm-hmm.
and we try not to
overlap
by at least a 3-month buffer. Yeah, yeah. But that won't stop me from doing radio shows with them. Both Fran Wild and Nathan Bollingrad are wonderful people. And Fran has her first novel out, and I am so happy about that.
Yeah.
There are a lot of really good people who will have a lot of first novels out at this time, including Matt, including Fran, including Allison Wise. I think that was her first novel.
Is it a novel out?
Isn't there?
I don't know.
Or forthcoming.
Is it a novel or a collection?
And Alana. Alana, whose last name is different on her book than it is in real life.
Alana
Teitelbaum? Yes.
She's reading for us in a few months.
Yes, yes, you see? You see? All these people who I was thinking, oh, on our 25th anniversary reading series, I want to have A, B, C, D, E, and G, and I don't tend to post mine until the last minute because often I'm really running off the top of my head putting it together. I can tell people now November.
Well, we're scheduled through next...
You're through next millennium.
Through fall 2016, I think, or August.
Yeah, November, John Joseph Adams will interview people, will introduce people from... pardon me, what's his new...
I don't know. Press Enter? I have no
idea. His new Best of Science Fiction.
Oh, Best of American Science Fiction.
Best of American Science Fiction for Houghton Mifflin. And we will have Seanan McGuire.
Well, that's good.
Carmen.
Machado. Carmen Marie Machado. She's good.
Yes. So that's a nice lineup. So that's November 10th. We may or may not have a November 3rd reading. And that all depends on who's hanging out from World Fantasy and coming to New York.
Yeah, I don't remember who we're having in November.
And then in December, it's always Delia and Ellen.
Oh, we have Delia a few months after that, but I can't remember.
Because of her new book, I think.
Oh, I don't know.
But it's the Delia and Ellen show, which is a whole other ball of...
wax.
Yeah, exactly. not that either of them were ever in the Women's Army Corps. The books that you currently have out. We're already out of time in our theme music.
The Dog Collection from Tor. Best Horror of the Year from Nightshade. Number 7, rather. Yeah, that's just out. And coming out October 27th, The Monstrous, which will be illustrated by John Coulthard. We have one original story by John Langan and lots of other great stuff by Peter Straub and other people.
And ongoing on a regular basis, Tor.com.
Yes, Tor.com. I've got stuff coming out. Maria Devana Headley has a story coming out
this year.
And next year I have a bunch of stuff I've bought. David Nickel. I can't. Another Dennis Danvers.
Oh, so, good. I really like this.
Melissa Marr. Who else will have it?
And
Glenn Hirschberg. That is really unlike what he. It's not a ghost story. So it is. Well, it's just very weird.
And the shared Twitter recommendation feed, which I think is such a great idea.
SF Editor Picks, I think it's called.
I believe that's it. SF Editor Picks.
Yeah.
And that
it's on Facebook also. We have a little community there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just follow us, and see, maybe you'll find some things that you're not aware of.
And if you're looking for recommendations for stuff to read, particularly horror and dark fantasy, all you need to do is get the books that you've been hearing about, especially the past years, and look at the table of contents, preferably read the books.
But also look at the summary. I just want to say that for the best, the SF editor's picks, we're not allowed to pick stories we publish. We edited, so... it's ethical, and I think that's right, but, that means we can't recommend things we bought. That's okay.
Yeah, which is weird, because if you didn't think they were good or worth recommending, you wouldn't have bought them.
Right. Let other people recommend them. I'll retweet something. Recommend something. I've done that.
Okay. Burn Baby Burn Clapper with Lister, back from the Carolinas. Did you get arrested? But there's always a chance. You could build a clock. That's a good way to get arrested on this day. Okay. Thank you all for listening. I'll be back next week with Hour of the Wolf from 1:30 to 3 a.m.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, Ellen Bounce. Everybody, have a good day.